Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason. I've got Stewie joining me for this one. How are you?
My name's Stu, and I like to party.
Well, my name is Jason, and I like to party.
No, you don't like to party. I'm the one that likes to party.
This week will be a fun one. This one will be a fun one. It's a film that you and I both love, Stewie. It's a cult classic, so let's get into it. This week we will be discussing 2007 motorcycle stuntman comedy Hot Rod. I'll give you a synopsis. It's a film about self-professed stuntman Rod Kimball, who wants to follow in his late father's footsteps. Upon learning, though, that his stepfather needs a heart transplant and doesn't have long left to live, Rod decides to raise the $50,000 to save Frank's life by jumping 15 buses, one more than Evel Knievel. I checked online. Rod and his crew help him train for the jump, where while he doesn't successfully make the jump, he still does raise the funds required to save Frank's life and beat him in a fight. Stewie, this is a fun movie, as I alluded to. It's a cult classic, as I alluded to. What do you love so much about this movie?
Honestly, it's kind of Andy Samberg's coming of age. It's when he suddenly came into my consciousness. Living in Australia, I wasn't totally across Saturday Night Live. I've become familiar with some of his famous skits since then, but definitely, you know, after the fact. This was my first introduction to Andy Samberg. A lot of those guys, really. The whole Lonely Island crew. I'm not sure if I'd seen Bill Hader before either. I'm pretty sure I was familiar with Danny McBride. But, you know, listen to those names that I'm just that are just rolling off my tongue right now. Isla Fisher as well, which is pretty cool, given the Australian-ness of it all. You know, you hear that cast and, you know, some of the funniest people on the planet then and you know, arguably still now. So it was always going to be a winner. What about you, mate?
Yeah, I was saying to you off mic about like my story of in terms of how I came to know of this film. And I think that prior to me actually watching this movie or knowing about this movie, like I knew of The Lonely Island. And so like I had an understanding of like who these guys were, at least like, you know, Andy Samberg and Jorma Taccone, and obviously you have Akiva Schaffer as the director of this movie. And so I think that, you know, like when you see those names, you sort of like come to understand like what this type of movie will be like. And so I think that that's what makes this movie so great. And obviously the guys from The Lonely Island, all three of them, they've done so much more in not even just like only the music space, but in the film space as well. And, you know, it's just a great partnership that they have to continue to create some good content like this. But my first interaction with this movie, it actually came from a church youth group that I went to, probably around that sort of high school age, probably I want to say around 2014-ish, probably the late high school age. And it was, I mean, like, yeah, I've said that it's a cult classic, and it was within my church youth group as well. And so much so that I think that one night we just put it on, and from there, like, you know, the laughs that we had are like the people that I guess hadn't seen it up until that point. Like, I just remember like laughing in every single scene, basically. And it was from there that I was hooked. This has become one of my favorite movies. And, you know, it's just a movie that's so memorable. It's so quotable. I mean, we've already said two quotes. I'm not sure how many more that we will actually reference tonight, but, you know, we could reference the whole movie. Like, that's how good it is. And yeah, I think that it just has that cult status. And, you know, like the people that know about this movie, like they do love it so much. And, you know, it's just like that community that knows this movie and loves it so much. And, you know, I think that people just have a lot of fun with this movie. Like I said, like it's quotable. You know, you can have a lot of laughs with it. And so much so that my youth group, we went to an event called State Youth Games, which is just a gathering of different youth groups for a weekend that, you know, have a weekend away playing sport and doing worship stuff. And I remember we had our campsite and we had some speakers there, and they played the song that It's the scene where I think Will Arnett's character first pops up, and I think it's like Rod and his crew are like dancing outside of a store, and they're doing all these crazy dance moves and stuff like that. And I remember at this State Youth Games event, they played the song that was playing on there, and a couple of the youth leaders got up and did the same dance moves. And I think it just never ends, like the love for this film, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's one of the most quotable movies I've ever watched in my life. I mean, I first saw this movie 15 years ago, just to make us both feel old there, Jason. And, you know, I still use quotes from this movie to this day. It doesn't have a 10 out of 10 for those keeping score on my IMDb ratings. It has an 8 out of 10. But still, that's very high. I'm very stingy with my ratings, so it's very high. And you could see, anyway, it's not about me. You could see the promise that these guys all had, you know, back then. You kind of knew that they were going to be stars, and that's how it's turned out.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll get on to some references to history now. And I think the main one that we get is the reference to Evel Knievel. And so he was an American stunt performer and an entertainer. And over the course of his career, he attempted more than 75 ramp-to-ramp motorcycle jumps. He was inducted into the Motorcycle Hall of Fame in 1999. And funnily enough, actually, you know, obviously this film, yeah, does reference Evel Knievel. You know, we come to learn, or like Rod believes that his father was Evel Knievel's sort of second, you know, stuntman, tried out the jumps before Evel just to make sure that they were all safe and stuff like that. But we come to learn that that's not the case anymore, as Rod goes into a spiral of, you know, becoming a, you know, regular civilian. and, you know, he becomes too legit to quit.
I used to be legit. In fact, I was too legit. I was too legit to quit. But now, I'm not legit. I'm unlegit. And for that reason, I must quit.
But yeah, I think that it was funny, actually, because Evel Knievel died, I believe it was 3 months after this movie was released.
Wow. So is, first of all, kudos on finding a way to work this segment into this movie. I was thinking about it before we recorded and I thought, how the hell are you going to do this? But that's why you're the host, mate. Do you know if you ever laid eyes on this movie?
Oh, that is a really good question. Yeah, I actually have no idea. That would be really interesting to learn, actually.
Yeah. interesting. Anyway, what a funny thing. I actually, if you would have asked me before you mentioned that, I would have maybe said that Evel Knievel had already passed away by the time this movie comes out. So just the thought that this movie existed, albeit briefly, at the same time as he did, kind of adds to the hilarity in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was born in 1938, and so he died at the age of 69. Nice. But still, like, it's interesting that, you know, they reference him, that he was sort of like had this presence as a stunt performer, you know, so much so that they sort of modeled a storyline around him, I guess, because that was a large part of why Rod wanted to be a stuntman, was because his father was as well. And so I think that they do make reference to that. They obviously had that picture, which I believe is digitally edited, that shows
no
Rod's
way.
Father.
No way.
but yeah, we learned that Rod's father was just, or Evel Knievel was just in town for, I think it was a conference or something like that. And, you know, I was taking photos. And like I said, Rod went into a spiral where he became a functioning member of society.
He tried to just become a regular Joe. He was, it didn't work. It's not what he was put on the planet to do, Rod Kimball. He was put on the planet to be a stuntman. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of other references to history as well, actually, in terms of, like, stuntmans as well. And so the other one that was referenced is during the double date scene. Jonathan offhandedly refers to Rod as Super Dave. This is a nod to Super Dave Osborne, who was a comedy stuntman played by Bob Einstein in the mid-1980s. So that's another reference to a stuntman, this time a comedy one, not a real one. But again, like, I think that it's interesting that they could make a film about a stuntman and reference all these stuntmans who, you know, I guess, like, I haven't even really thought about it until now that, like, you know, it is a profession. But, like, yeah, I didn't even think about it until now.
Yeah, it's a real life job. Absolutely. Not one that has ever really interested me. I'm too much of a chicken, I guess. Or maybe I've just got, you know, my head on my shoulders correctly. Somewhere in the middle usually is where the truth lies. So
so I know that I made that joke just before about Rod jumping 15 buses. That was one more than Evel Knievel. And that claim is actually true. And so on October 25, 1975, Evel Knievel made the most daring jump of his career and his most successful as well, where he jumped over 14 Greyhound buses. He reached a speed of 95 miles an hour as he took off from the start, sailed 133 feet in length, and it beat his previous attempt of 13. The jump set a world record that remained unbroken for 24 years. During the jump, Knievel's back wheel actually touched down on the canopy of the final bus. However, it did not affect his landing. And a crowd of about 25,000 were on hand to witness the jump at the Mason, Ohio amusement park.
Jeez, man. Tom, before the internet, hey, do you reckon that he'd get 25,000 people down now? I don't think it would be as big of an event these days.
I don't know. Like, AM radio was pretty popular back then. So I reckon that if they had the rights...
Touché. Well played.
I gotta tell you, boys, I couldn't be more excited about this jump. When people hear me describing it over the radio, they are going to remember that AM radio is a viable and modern source for news and entertainment.
Totally.
Oh, I used to be number one in this town, but people don't listen to AM like they used to. Seems like it's more about FM and color TV.
That's stupid.
It sure is, Kevin. In fact, I've got a tattoo here that fully illustrates my point. It's of this rebellious young man, and he's urinating on an FM radio. And then this other stream of urine is going on to that television set. Implausible, I know, but I like to imagine that he had sex the night before, and now a little bit of residue is blocking his urethra, allowing the urine to flow in two separate directions. You may also note that an AM radio is sitting safely dry in the middle.
It's all magic carpet there.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Now, Rod, I've spent the station's last $15,000 on this, so it has to be a big success. Do you understand?
You can count on me, sir.
Excellent. This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back. Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
All right. Well, yeah, I think that that's all for references to history. There wasn't that much more, but we will move on now and talk about how well the film depicted the sport. And I guess that we've, like, talked a bit about it already in terms of, you know, the validity of someone being able to jump that many buses. But I think that a lot of it as well, like, we're probably going to talk about, like, the training scenes, really, because, like, I find it very hard to believe that Evel Knievel might have, like, you know, just, like, jumped off a tower at a kid's birthday party, or, like, you know, just jumped a pool. But, like, I feel like the training methods, even just, like, you know, rolling down a big hill on, like, what looked like a cart, like a wooden cart type of thing. Like, I don't see Evel Knievel doing that. Like, you know, trying to be sneaky around, like, trees and wrapped in bubble wrap and then being hit by a truck. I'm just like, I question the methods of training, I think.
Listen, I know this is a tough podcast to do our traditional segments in, and I'm going to help you out where we can, Jace, where I can, should I say. But unfortunately, I usually, when we watch a movie and it's about a sport, I've got some kind of grasp on the inner machinations of training and how the mechanics of the sport work. Unfortunately, on this one, man, I got no fucking clue. Honestly, I would buy all of those things that you said you would have a hard time believing. I would buy all of those. A stuntman could tell me that that's what he does in training. I have no foot to stand on in terms of saying no, it's not. So maybe it is the counterpoint. Maybe it is. There's something funny. God. I mean, that's what makes the movie funny, I suppose. But just thinking about this, celebrity, fully grown man doing all these ridiculous things as part of training for his profession, you know.
Yeah. No, I think like what makes this movie so like, you know, memorable as well is just like the, you know, hilarity of the scenes and like the ridiculousness of them. But I think that, you know, like we might touch on it now in terms of like, you know, we know these guys to be sort of like comical geniuses. I don't know if we'll call them that, but I feel like they are. Like,
me both too.
Both in the music and the film sense. But I think that so much of that as well is just like the ability to sort of improvise. And so like, you know, the scene where Rod asks Kathy out and starts laughing hysterically.
What do I owe you?
725.
So,
hi.
239's your change. Thank you.
We don't talk much, do we?
Kathy, was it?
I'm Rod. I do awesome stunts all the time with my friends. You probably didn't know that. And you probably have lots of cool stuff about you that I don't know. Point is, if you don't sit down with someone and really talk and get to know them, you never find those things out. So what do you say? You want to make this thing official?
Are you asking me out?
Oh, Kathy.
Wow, Rod. I can't believe she said yes.
Yeah, well, you have only to believe if you wish to achieve, Kevin. That rhymed. Unintentional.
That was improvised by Andy Samberg. A scene involving Rod ringing the bell over the pool, followed by the other guys singing along to the bell.
Okay, you guys, if I'm gonna jump 15 buses, my body's gonna have to be in top physical form. Which brings us to our first exercise, lung strengthening. You guys are gonna hold me underwater for 40 seconds. That's 20 less than a minute. My body's natural instinct is gonna be to resist, but no matter what, don't let up. If there's any problem at all, I will ring this bell.
That was completely improvised. I've just got one more improvised scene. It was the scene where Rod is riding his bike to his date with Kathy and he's singing, oh, when you're going on a date, you put on a shirt and you ride your bike to the date. Andy Samberg does it so much better, but there you go.
Oh, when you're going on a date, you put on a shirt and you drive your bike to the date.
That was improvised by Andy Samberg.
Yeah, right. Interesting. It doesn't surprise me. Honestly, you could tell me this entire movie is improvised and it wouldn't surprise me, you know, and I don't mean that in a negative way. It's impressive and it wouldn't, you know, the talent of these guys, it wouldn't shock you.
Yeah, no, like you almost don't need a script, I feel like, with this. In our, how well the film depicts the sport, we've obviously got a movie here about a stuntman. And so we've questioned the validity of like the training methods and all of that. But in terms of the stunts itself that we saw in the movie, you've got a bit about what particular stunts Andy Samberg actually completed himself.
Andy Samberg performed as many of the stunts in the film that the studio would allow. Including the pool scene and a couple of others, which is kind of wild when you think about it. Interestingly, the opening scene where Rod is jumping the US mail van, there is a stuntman in that particular scene, and the stuntman broke his leg. So, yeah, there's some crazy stuff with the stunts here. I'm not sure who does the tumble down the hill. That lasts for 47 seconds after the punch dancing scene. But yeah, you yeah, it's crazy.
Quiet place.
So yeah, that's what I've got about the stunts, mate. You got anything about it?
No, I just want to say like that scene where he is falling through the forest, like it does seem like it goes on for ages. I don't know if I would have expected it to go on for 47 seconds. But like it does go on for ages, and I mean, like it just adds to the humor, I think, in terms of like, you know, just it seems like they've just like thrown him, you know, the fact that like how the trajectory of like, you know, his falls or like, you know, and just, you know, the, yeah, the amount of like meters, I guess, that he like, you know, leaps into the air and just like continues to tumble. And like, yeah, it just, I think it adds to the humor, honestly. Like, and I just like wonder about like all these things about like, you know, and I think this is a case of like, you know, what they chose to include and what they didn't choose to include, or what they had planned to film and what was written in the script and then not. And I think that it's just a credit to them, as, you know, sort of people that make these films, and, you know, just the ability to work on the fly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. It's interesting when you do a little bit of research, Jace. I did a bit of research. Just how much of the iconic stuff from this film is ad-libbed. The Cool Beans scene was ad-libbed.
Hey.
Hey.
So look, I was way out of line, and I'm sorry.
It's okay. Sorry about your dad.
Thanks.
So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
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 Cool, cool.
Beans.
Beans.
Cool.
Beans.
Cool, cool.
Beans.
Beans.
Cool.
Beans.
Cool, cool.
Beans.
Beans.
Cool.
Beans.
Cool.
Beans.
Cool, cool. Beans.
Beans.
Cool.
So, Cool Beans?
Yeah.
Cool Beans.
It was wasn't even part of the original take of the movie. It was added in post, which is, you know, that's iconic. It stands the test of time. I got daughters that laugh about that, you know, so it's very funny. Will Arnett, when Denise leaves him and he's in the car, saying, babe, wait.
Jonathan, Rod's doing the jump.
Oh, my God, who cares?
Babe, why do you hang with those nerds?
I like those nerds.
Well, guess what? You're embarrassing yourself.
It's only embarrassing if you care what people think.
That's a good one. I like that. Babe.
Goodbye.
Babe, wait. Babe, wait. Babe, wait. Babe! Babe, wait! Babe! 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 Babe, wait! Babe, no! Babe, no! Babe, no! Babe!
That's all improvised. It's all very funny. And like you said, it just speaks to the comedic genius. And, you know, I don't know who wouldn't call these guys comedic geniuses, Jay. So I think it's not our take. I think we can put the full weight of Goals on Film and our army of listeners behind the fact that these guys are comedic geniuses and probably some of the preeminent comics of their generation, particularly you know, in the mediums that you mentioned, the music space and you know, particularly the TV space as well, like TV comedy space too.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they obviously drew on inspiration for some of the things as well. You have a bit of a fun fact about Dave, Bill Hader's character, basing one of the moments of the film on an interaction that he had with a friend.
Yeah, so one of my favorite scenes in the movie actually is when Dave calls Rod, and it's during the time that Rod's trying to be a 9-to-5er, and he's given up on being a stuntman, and he's tripping balls, and he's had a bit of a mischief in the workshop. Rod takes him to the hospital.
Yeah.
Hey, man, what's going on, man? I just, you know, wanted to call, see how you're doing.
Maybe you'd want to hang out, you know, possibly take me to the hospital, you know?
If you're free.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, man, everything's great. No. But, you know, it's probably just precautionary, you know, if you just want to swing by, man, I totally appreciate it.
Yeah, sure, just give me a minute.
Hey, Rod, thanks for riding. Hey, buddy, how's it going?
Dave, what happened to your eye?
This?
Yeah.
Is it really noticeable?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's totally serendipitous. Well, I got off work early, and you know my buddy Derek? Well, he was like,
I've got this acid, but I can't do it.
And I was all like,
well, I'll do it.
So I did it. And by the time I got on my banana board, man, I was tripping balls pretty hard, man. So I decided to get on my bench grinder, and a piece of metal flew up and hit me right in the eye. It's pretty awesome. And that brings us to now.
Yeah, well, just try and relax.
Can do, man. Can do.
It's fucking hilarious. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor, check it out. But what made it even more funny was when I was doing my research for this movie, and I came across a little nugget that told us that Bill Hader actually based this entire scene around a real life interaction that he had with a friend of his called Eric, I think. Obviously, Bill Hader was the Rod and Eric was the Dave in that real life enactment of that incredible movie scene. It's just tremendous, mate. Yeah. It's good. Check it out.
No, I think like something so good about like that scene in particular, and I guess like in the movie overall, is like, you know, you obviously have those moments of the movie that are memorable, but I feel like, you know, and you know, like the Cool Beans scenes is like that, you know, the you look shitty scene is like that.
Rod?
Denise!
Hey! How's it going?
Oh, great. Everything's going super great. You look different.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's been a while. You look pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah, thanks.
And I see you're still doing your stunts.
Big time. Actually, here, peep the strategy.
You're jumping the pool? Wow.
Yeah, it's the real deal. You should come.
Maybe I will. Thanks.
Cool.
Well, I gotta go. I gotta feed Buddy, but very nice to see you, Rod.
Yeah, you too. You look pretty.
What did you say?
I said you look shitty. Good night, Denise.
But, like, I think that, like, a lot of, like, what this movie, and, like, you might even, like, miss it on, like, you know, initial viewings as well, is like those sort of like offhand comments, or those like comments that are sort of like hidden behind other things, or like are sort of like mumbled as well and like aren't like clear enough. And mm-hmm. I think that movie has a couple of them where, like, you know, in a movie that has so many good quotes, like, I mean, you might be, you know, excused for you know, not sort of remembering a couple of them, but I feel like that scene has like one of like the best lines, you know, just in terms of like Dave being like, oh, I think we ran over a small bus. It's just like, and then like, when he gets to the hospital, it's like points to a trash can and is like, hospital?
But that bike like, gets me every time. The hospital?
But
no, trash can.
I think that like as much as you have like those sorts of like quotes from this movie, there are even like so many like underappreciated quotes as well. Mm-hmm. And like one of the quotes that like I remember that like I didn't really pick up on the first couple of viewings, but like I have since, like obviously since I've watched this movie billions of times, is like when they're filling up the pool for Rod's like, you know, underwater training.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Dave again, actually. He's like says under his breath, pools are excellent for holding water or something like that. It's just comments like that that I think like really make the movie so much better.
It definitely is. It bears fruit as a rewatchable, this movie. You know, the more you watch it, the more you appreciate it, the more you find those little hidden nuggets that make you laugh. I couldn't agree more, mate.
I think this whole film is wild, honestly. Like, we could talk about every scene, like, go scene by scene, I reckon. And there's even, like, some scenes that in, you know, this episode that we won't even get to because we could get to every single one of them. But I think that one of the scenes that we should talk about, because it does have an Australian reference to it, and obviously a reference to Isla Fisher, but the other Australian reference, I think, is John Farnham and the use of You're the Voice. And
what a weird needle drop, you know, just putting You're the Voice by John Farnham in the middle of this movie is very bizarre.
Was that because of us?
I don't know. I mean, it started off super positive, then it just got crazy.
I did not like that at all.
No, Kev. None of us did.
Yeah, it was totally messed up. It's disgusting how people will just, you know, take something good and just take advantage of a situation.
Yeah.
There was no time to do anything except just leave and just hope that you're not hurt.
And it's weird, the story about, like, how they actually came to use the song as well. And so in the commentary for this movie, the guys say that they heard of John Farnham because he had songs in a 1986 movie called Rad. And so they used the song in You're the Voice in the riot scene. And Rad, funnily enough, was a movie about a young man's journey to win a BMX race called the Hell Track. So good little nod to sort of like both films there, I guess. But it does really seem out of place.
It really does.
It's just like the whole scene, like it's obviously like this real uplifting moment. They like walk the streets to the racetrack, they gather all these people, and yeah, I don't even really remember like why or how like people start singing, and you've got like the row of like three people all like harmonizing together, and then you've got the crowd joining in, and then it just breaks out into a riot. And again, we get a great scene at the end of that as well, where Rico, like, they're obviously running away from this, and they're like, what just happened? Was that because of us? And Rico's like, yeah, I don't understand how anyone could take a moment like that and take something so positive and just, you know, create something so, you know, vicious or, you know, whatever. And then, you know, you see him holding a TV as well.
It's brilliant. Yeah. Just a shout out to my good buddy back in Adelaide, Tim Joy. He's a huge fan of that Rad film that you referenced before. Yeah. One time John Farnham was performing at Splendor on the Grass, I think it was, and a very drunk Tim Joy was heckling him, telling him to sing the songs from Rad throughout his performance. So, yeah, shout out, Tim.
I think we'll move on to, you know, just the script writing, because Pam Brady is credited as the writer of the film, but she didn't actually write what did become the Hot Rod. You know, Lonely Island guys did. They rewrote the entire script to suit their style, and it was originally intended as a vehicle for Will Ferrell. And you've got a bit more information on that, Stewie.
I don't. Actually, that's all I had. But I do have a little bit about the writing process. So Pam Brady, of course, is one of the writers for South Park, one of the most enduring comedies, 25, 26, maybe even 30 seasons. It's Simpsons level, that stuff. So, you know, she has some experience as a comedy writer. And, of course, a late-night talk show host and Saturday Night Live alum Seth Meyers got involved in the writing process too. Yeah, and then, like you said, the Lonely Island boys got their hands on it. I'm sure Danny McBride, Bill Hader, those guys. Actually, when I was reading about the Seth Meyers thing, he said that they wrote a bunch of it in Lorne Michaels' office. And Lorne Michaels, of course, is the head honcho, the supremo at Saturday Night Live. And so I'm pretty sure that all those SNL guys that were a part of the film had their two cents worth. And they put together a masterpiece, a comedic masterpiece.
Yeah, no, SNL like really has been a sort of driver for a lot of people's like comedians' careers, hasn't it? Like, I feel like, yeah, you know, they've just been the start of many people's careers and have gone on for so long and become so successful with the genre of comedy and stuff. And so I think that, yeah, a lot of people have gotten the start, and obviously Andy Samberg and these guys did as well. Many of these guys did. And so, yeah, it's cool to see them all, like, you know, become successful and still band together and create some comedic stuff for all of us viewers. But so just leading on from the Will Ferrell stuff, he actually received an executive producer credit. But as I said, Lonely Island rewrote the script because it couldn't be read without Ferrell in mind. And Akiva Schaffer didn't want the movie to be an impression of Will Ferrell. And so that's the whole reason why they rewrote the script. And honestly, like, you know, like, we'll get into, like, you know, the casting a bit later, and I know that we're sort of going into your expertise of the casting, what if, Stewie. But I honestly see, like, if it wasn't Andy Samberg in the Rod Kimball role, I would definitely pick Will Ferrell. Like, you know, like, as much as, yeah, we say that Will Ferrell was the one who was first in mind for this whole concept of the movie, like, I would have said that Will Ferrell was the perfect person for this role, you know, aside from Andy Samberg. So, yeah,
I think when we watched it together, actually a few weeks ago, we had a discussion about this, and I don't know if it's kind of like, is psychosomatic the right word? Because, you know, because we know Will Ferrell was associated with it to begin with, you know, we're kind of attaching him to it as probably the best substitute for Andy Samberg. But yeah, I completely agree with you, mate. I can't picture anyone else other than Andy Samberg playing the role. But I don't even know if he could do it as well, but you could picture it as a Will Ferrell vehicle, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, I might have mentioned this, or I might have, like, confirmed my suspicions in terms of seeing Will Ferrell in this role, like, when me and Kieran did Kicking and Screaming just before the Christmas break. You know, like, that was, like, and, like, this, that was, movie was around this time as well. So it was, like, peak Will Ferrell. In terms of, you know, he'd done Kicking and Screaming, Elf, you know, he was slated to do this. What else? Blades of Glory, all this sort of stuff. Like, there's so much more that I'm probably forgetting. But yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that Will Ferrell would have just slotted in perfectly for this role. But I think that this film was also made for Andy Samberg. And so I think that, you know, to me, like, it was a bit of a like for like. I feel like you could have picked either. Obviously, the one that we got was with Andy Samberg, and I don't think that I would have changed it for anything, but I definitely could have seen Will Ferrell in this role if that's the way that they chose to go. I think that he would have played it, you know, similar enough with his own, obviously, twist, just as Andy Samberg played it with his own twist. But I can definitely see similarities between Andy Samberg and Will Ferrell, especially at this time, and especially in terms of, like, both of their comedic presence and the way that they go about their comedy.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, we'll get into the cast now, and we have talked about a lot of them, but there's such a large ensemble cast of, you know, as we keep on saying, comedic geniuses. And so we'll run you through, you know, the main cast list, I guess. And so we have Andy Samberg as Rod Kimball, John McComb as Kevin Powell, Bill Hader as Dave McLean, Danny McBride as Rico Brown, Isla Fisher as Denise Harris, Sissy Spacek as Marie Powell, Ian McShane as Frank Powell, and Will Arnett as Jonathan Ault. And so, I mean, yeah, like I said, they're all comedic geniuses. They're all well known. And I think that that's what also makes this movie so great, because they do have, you know what to expect from them, I think. And so when you have all of them together in the one space, in the one movie, you know that it's going to be good. But is there any particular actor that you want to single out in terms of their portrayal of a particular character or just how they acted in the movie?
Listen, you read out that that cast list, man, and it's just, it's talent top to bottom, you know what I mean? I think Bill Hader deserves a shout out outside of the obvious. I mean, obviously, Andy Samberg is the star of the show here, but I think Bill Hader and his supporting role is definitely one of the highlights. I enjoy all of his scenes, all his little one-liners, his weirdness. I dig it. It's really good. He had hair extensions for this whole movie too. So, yeah. Anyway, Bill Hader's the one for me. What about you, bro?
I honestly feel like Danny McBride. And I think it just like goes to, just like his presence. Like he seems like this huge tough guy, but at the same time, like he is like this kind-hearted guy as well. And, you know, like I think a lot of like that is when Rod is like going down that hill on that piece of wood and he crashes into some guy's truck and guy comes out of his house storming like, you know, what the hell have you done? And, Rico's just like, I'm taking care of this. And he starts whacking him with like I think it's like a construction cone or something like that. And it's just like, you're going to take the demons out of me? I've been drinking green tea all goddamn day. Just like stealing the hat. Like, it's totally my hat now.
Oh, my trailer. What the hell? One of you is getting your dick hole smashed.
Oh,
I'm freaking pumped. I've been drinking green tea all goddamn day.
Man, he hit his ass with a working towel, man. Yeah. Nice.
God, I go to church every goddamn Sunday. You gonna bring the demons out of me?
Rico, you got him.
Rico. Not with the trash can. Yes.
No. Oh. Trash.
All right, let's get him off.
Okay.
You better work. No. This is my hat now. This is totally my hat.
Yeah. I think just like scenes like that. I think like it seems like what's the one like at the end where like they're giving Rod like before the final jump, they're giving Rod like a new suit and the, oh, it's a rock. He's like, and they've like given Rod like a new suit and a new moped and Rico's there like, and I'm giving you this rock as a token of my appreciation. You can basically throw that out after you're done with the race.
There's one more thing, Rod. I know how you like explosions and showmanship and stuff. So I rigged the whole jump with fireworks.
Cool.
And I got you this rock to represent all my hard work.
Oh, cool. Rico, that's number one.
Yeah, you can pretty much just toss that after the fireworks go off. It's cool.
Thanks.
I think that as much as we're like singling out Bill Hader and Danny McBride here, I think that we can do this for like most of the characters and most of the actors as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that there's just so much. But I remember we were watching it, Stewie, and I think that you said that you had forgotten about this character of Richardson. The guy, the tall, lanky guy who appears in a couple of scenes and does some erotic type of dances.
Fantastic character. It completely was erased from my mind. It had been such a long time since I'd watched the movie, but it was a pleasant surprise, and his little dances and his desperation to be part of the gang is definitely endearing throughout the movie.
Yeah, no, and the only other character that I want to definitely mention, because I love him so much, and he plays the same type of role, I feel like, in every single piece of media that he is in, is Chris Parnell. So he played Barry Pasternak, who was the announcer of the radio station. I forget the name of the radio station now, but like even his lines, and I think it is just like the delivery of the lines. I think that's what I'm getting at in terms of like a lot of these casts. Like it's the delivery of the lines. And so like, you know what to expect from Andy Samberg. And like, you know, he can be like the serious guy or he can be like the guy that is You know, in terms of his voice and stuff like that, like the guy that's just like annoyed by everything. And I think that I look back to that scene where like they're showing the film in the auditorium and he turns to Kevin Jorma and just like, you know, turn it off or something like that. but I think that Chris Parnell, like the delivery that he has of his lines, and I feel like any media that I've consumed with Chris Parnell in it, you know, like it's the same sort of like, I don't even know if it's like deadpan delivery or anything like that, but he says it like so similarly. And so I think that like that's what sort of draws me to Chris Parnell as an actor, and then like all of his characters, like they're played the same, but they're also played differently.
He's got that that sound of like a 70s or 80s radio announcer, maybe not the sound but the cadence, you know, just the way he enunciates the words and stuff.
Kimball's preparing for his final approach, ascending the multiple ramp levels to the tippy top. Here he goes.
It's definitely nice. I mean, I get what you're saying, like he's the same but different. I mean, you could argue that he plays the same character on the Archer animated TV series, you know, and that's an animated character. So yeah, I think that makes total sense, what you're saying about Chris Parnell there.
Was there any character in this movie that you found yourself relating to in any ways, Joey?
Not particularly. I can't say that I did, to be honest. How about you, mate?
Not really. But I definitely, and I referenced it before, Rico's comment about drinking green tea. There was a stage where I did drink a lot of green tea. And yeah, so I think that, you know, I'd definitely used that line before. So I think that that would be the relatability to me. But I feel like, and we've sort of said it before as well on this episode, that I guess like the relatability is just like saying these lines, these quotable lines in everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, just the quotability of the movie is definitely the most relatable aspect of the movie, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans.
We better not start that. We'll be here all night, pal.
All right. Well, before we get on to our last prompt, Stewie, I do want to ask you one question in particular.
Okay.
And that is, who do you think would win in a fight between a grilled cheese sandwich and a taco?
You know, prison rules, a taco. yeah. In a fair fight. Just a street fight, probably the grilled cheese, I would say. What about you, mate?
I reckon the grilled cheese.
Wow.
Yeah, grilled cheese. Absolutely. I just reckon, you know, it's easier to crush a taco.
That's it. It might fight dirty, but it's got a weak chin, a taco. So, you know. I think you could be onto something there, mate.
Well, we're getting to our last prompt of the episode now, and it asks, if you could have a motorcycle movie get made, what would it be and why?
Jason, fuck it, hell, mate. I have no clue whatsoever. We can't do a sequel to this movie because... it's just one of those ones that just needs to be left alone.
Yeah, I don't think they'd do a sequel in the same way. I don't think they could do it in the same way.
Nah, I think, and this could be a cop-out answer. As a matter of fact, it definitely is, but I'm standing by it anyway. I want to see the Will Ferrell version of this movie. Yeah. I just want to say, I don't want it to replace it. I don't want a, you know, sliding doors where Andy Samberg doesn't do this movie. I want both of them movies to stand up side by side. I'd be very curious to see the Will Ferrell take on Hot Rod. I think that'd be a great watch.
Yeah. I don't know too much about the motorcycle scene around the world, and definitely not in Australia.
Okay.
Surprise you to learn.
Very surprised, yeah.
But mine sort of like leads on from maybe your idea, maybe the idea of this film. But I would love to see, and like obviously they have like motorcycle events around the world as well. And I think that the biggest one is probably the X Games, which I believe is in June this year, June or mm-hmm. July. But I would love to see, this sort of actually leads on to a sequel.
Just go with it.
I'd love to see, I'd love to see a scene where a stuntman enters a proper motorcycle motocross event and, you know, competes himself. Maybe something happens to, actually, yeah, maybe something happens to the person who does the stunt, he does the stunts for, and so needs to sort of take the place of them, and he enters a competition and, you know, needs to navigate that world away from just testing the jumps to actually being involved in, doing the jumps for real.
I think in my long history of being on this show, this is the first time I've ever beaten you at this segment, Jason.
All right, I'll take the L this time. All right, so that does now bring us to the end of the episode. So, Stu, would you like to share your social media handles and any other avenues or platforms where our listeners can see you?
Where can you see me? You can see me in real life. You can walk up to me, say, "G'day, Stewie. How you going?" I'll shake your hand and probably ask you what your name is. You can find me on social media, though. That's probably the most normal way to contact me. As Stewie the Sports Guy on TikTok and Instagram. And Stewie is Sick of It on the Twitter space. No Mastodon yet. You can find me occasionally writing things for Edge of the Crowd or at the Barrier Truth newspaper and online. Check it out, barriertruth.com.au. Also check out Edge of the Crowd, edgeofthecrowd.com. Jace, where can we find you, mate?
Yeah, well, Stewie, I just want to say that I will see you. I'll see you. Possibly this week. Never know. But that's where I'll find you.
Yes, you will find me in real life, out there in the world.
Out there in the outback. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Jace Herbs. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram at Goals on Film Pod. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Goals on Film, where we post video highlights after each episode. So weekly video highlights there. And Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd Network.